Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Pain don't hurt.
Is my boomstick.
Game over, man. Game over.
Welcome to the Bargain Bin. He is your host, Ben Mason.
And he is your co-host, Sandro Luketic. And today we're talking 1997's Mimic. Old enough movie, I don't think I have to send out the spoiler warning. But Sandro...
No. You always have to send out the spoiler warning.
Okay.
Because it'd be that one time you don't.
No,
and then this person listening to a movie review podcast would be like, I can't believe they would spoil a movie when reviewing it.
These fucking jerks, this movie's only from 97. I can't watch everything.
Who's on my to-do list next week?
Have we actually gotten a complaint for spoiling a movie?
Heck no. People don't listen to movie review podcasts without expecting some spoilers.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pointless.
I think this conversation covers it, though.
Yes. Tell me, Sandro. This movie is your pick.
Yeah, man.
I just picked the year, and this was on your list. Why Mimic? You had mentioned, I think, that it was something you had seen, but just don't remember?
Yeah, I thought I had seen this before. I have not.
Maybe you just forgot that you saw it, because I have seen this before. I didn't remember anything, which is weird because Del Toro, man, screenplay co-written by Del Toro, directed by Del Toro. Feel like his stuff kind of stands out. I'm going to bring him up right now because I want to see how many movies he's directed that you have seen.
Oh, this is not going to go well.
You might be surprised.
I'm putting this one in the haven't seen pile because usually if there's a movie I think I've seen, at least something jogs my memory. And I swear the only thing I recognize from this movie is perhaps the poster.
Yeah, I feel like he's produced more than he's directed because he has not directed that many films. So I'm going to say right away, his first film, Kronos, you have not seen.
Correct.
Very good movie. Mimic.
I've seen it now.
Technically. The Devil's Backbone.
Mm-mm.
Blade 2.
Yes.
Hellboy.
Is that the first one with Ron
first
Perlman?
First Ron Perlman.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, Ron Perlman's in a bunch of his work. They're great friends. Pan's Labyrinth.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Hellboy 2, The Golden Army.
Yes.
Pacific Rim. Giant Robots versus Kaiju.
Charlie Hunnam? Or
Yeah,
I've seen that one.
Yeah. Crimson Peak?
No.
No, me neither. Shape of Water?
No.
No, me neither. Nightmare Alley?
No.
No, me neither. And last year's Pinocchio?
No.
Yeah, same. Okay, so I've seen three more of his movies than you have. He really hasn't done a whole lot, but they're honestly pretty enjoyable.
I'm surprised I saw as many as I did see.
Yeah, right? He definitely has a style, though, specifically into how he wants monsters or creatures portrayed. And I was surprised, this being his second movie, his first major North American film, how much it does look like a Del Toro film. There are two sequels to this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what everybody says. Because no one has seen these fucking movies.
They're direct to DVD?
Direct to VHS, my friend.
Oh, right. Yes, this is older, isn't it?
Yeah, and I have no interest in seeing them.
Honest.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. But I feel like I'm going to have problems with your game this time around.
Are you now?
Because this cast is stacked. But I don't think we've really covered any of them except for maybe one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one I know for certain.
Ah, yes. I feel like it's going to play into a particular theme you've had recently.
Oh, no. Is there more than one?
Yes.
The trend continues. Because there is one actor in this movie that I love, and he is horribly underutilized. And that is F. Murray Abraham.
Yes. Dr. Gates.
Dr. Gates. Thank you. I forgot the name. And he was Practice in The Last Action Hero.
Correct. Yes.
That's all I've got.
Wow.
We haven't covered Mira Sorvino before, have we?
No.
And definitely not Jeremy Northam.
Can I say something and see if it tips you off?
Yeah, sure.
I can't believe I forgot Johnny Depp when I was doing Secret Window.
Oh, no. Josh, no. I don't know. What, is it Josh Brolin?
No.
Was it Jeremy Northam?
No.
Who? I don't know. Charles Dutton?
No. Yes.
What? In what?
Secret Window.
Oh, that was a really good tip.
Yes, we did this whole thing with Robert Englund. You're like, oh, this is just like when I forgot Johnny Depp with Secret Window. And here's this a movie is- with the guy from Secret Window.
That's right. That's right. He was the private investigator.
Yes, he was.
I can't believe you missed that one, dude.
Me? Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. I'll try to do better.
That's good. We have standards on this show.
Oh, man. I feel like Secret Window is forever going to be your crux of your existence in this game.
Yeah, it's the mumbo jumbo of our universe.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. It was just those two.
Just those two? Okay. So 50%. That's good.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
I feel like I should take points away from you for getting something from Secret Window, but...
Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing.
I'll let it go.
It's going to get worse. We both know this. Two things I want to mention before we really get into the movie here.
Okay.
Seeing, I don't know if you picked up on this, the music was done by Marco Beltrami. We have covered him numerous times on this show. His music is always amazing. But the special effects, did a name jump out at you?
Do you think I know the names of the special effects artists?
If you knew any of them, you would know this one because we praised him numerous times. Specifically for his work on The Thing. It's Rob Bottin.
Yeah, that name does not ring a bell.
That's a shame. Burn that into your memory, just like Secret Window.
I've already forgotten it.
But yeah, when you see Marco Beltrami and Rob Bottin in the credits, you know you're getting something that's going to be quite good, at least in those elements. So let's get into this film.
Yeah, man.
And the credit sequence looks like something out of a serial killer film to me.
Yes, it absolutely does.
I think it looks amazing, but potentially misleading.
Yes.
Because this movie feels like Seven right away. Did you know what the antagonists were going to be in this movie?
Oh, I don't, and I don't like how you ask that. Ants?
Not ants.
I don't know.
No, like, I don't think a lot of people going into this know that the adversaries are insects.
Oh, I thought you meant like they had an original plan and they switched it to insects. I misunderstood how you asked that question. I apologize.
Yeah. No, I think this could be a massive misdirect for people.
Okay.
To the film's detriment, in most cases. That is one thing I did remember about the movie. I completely forgot about the cast, which I don't know how because it's amazing. But yeah, I knew the insect plot. And I remember not really being overly stoked on it. So I was kind of dreading watching this, but we'll find out how I feel. So we cut to New York, which is definitely not Toronto, and get a voiceover explaining Strickler's disease, which is killing children at an alarming rate. First off, I love the imagery here. The hall that contains all of the sick children is definitely Del Toro's style, even though he didn't direct that scene. It's a beautiful shot. It's centered perfectly. But it called back to something that we watched more recently that I believe is a ripoff of that shot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that shot was ripped off by Ronnie Yu when he did that scene in Freddy versus Jason where we see all of the kids on tables being doused with Hypnosil, if you remember.
So not the experiment room in Double Dragon. Got it.
No. No. Although now that you mention it, kind of, but no. So deputy director of the CDC, Dr. Peter Mann, played by Jeremy Northam, who we definitely haven't covered before, is explaining the gravity of the situation to entomologist Dr. Susan Tyler, played by Mira Sorvino, who I'm surprised we have never covered before. Her work is amazing. But he's also pleading for her help. Her solution, Sandro, while brilliant, is pretty fucking crazy for a first idea.
Well, you have to imagine it's not the first idea. Feels like they were at the end of their ideas, and this was kind of like, we're calling in our last resort.
Well, honestly, give me that, the breakdown of all the failed plans, because I think that would have been hilarious. Gas them, no. Burn them, no. Create a super insect that's a cross between a mantis and a termite that secretes an enzyme that kills the city's cockroaches, which are believed to be spreading the disease? Fuck yeah.
That's exactly what I thought, too. Like, I saw this hallway and I'm like, that's exactly what I would do.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they have to act fast. This disease is killing all of the children.
Don't kill children.
You tell that to a bunch of cockroaches.
These movies know what they're doing.
They do, right? We see the deployment of this creation, the Judas breed, in the city sewers. And I have to ask what your thoughts are on the visuals here.
Before I get to the visuals, I feel like naming it the Judas breed is it's kind of foreboding for what's going to happen.
Why? What's your negative connotation to the name Judas?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
The visuals, though, I think they're pretty good, but incredibly gross. And that's something this movie nails for me. It actually made me feel queasy at points with how gross it is. I didn't know how you would react to that, if you felt the same way or if bugs actually gross you out.
Bugs do not gross me out, but seeing how much they foam in this movie is just a little gross.
I don't need my insects to foam. I really don't. But again, I can't help but appreciate the framing of these shots. It's very much like the hall. Very centered, symmetrical, beautiful, but disgusting at the same time. So the visual styling of the movie has me hooked, even if I find the subject matter really disturbing.
Yeah, it's got a very dark, dirty feel to it.
In a Del Toro movie? No. With minor religious iconography? You're way off.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch, but I tried.
At a press conference, we learned that the Judas breed was successful in eradicating the disease, and I guess now Peter and Susan are married because of the victory? They don't really seem compatible whatsoever.
Yeah, this really doesn't get explained. They just kind of skip to it 3 years later. They're together. It's like, did they meet then? Were they already a couple? What? I don't understand.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't think it's that important how they got together, but it's like, it's just no explanation.
Well, see, I think it is important because you and I both picked up on it. It's one of those things you're like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
They're, oh, sure, I guess. Okay. Oh, wait, we're moving forward with the story? Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, they celebrated the victory, and that night just became 3 years.
Yeah. The bathroom scene, I have problems with.
Okie dokie.
Like, I am glad that Susan actually brings up worry over long-term effects of what they did, even though we haven't really seen it 3 years later. And it seems like in most movies, nobody gives a shit about scenarios like this. It's like, come up with a solution. Okay, we did it. All right, it's done. Let's not worry about it. Oh, shit, there's fallout from it. Now what? She's actually calling the potential that they may have fucked up. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, she's really quick to getting to it, too, as this was, what, 3 years later?
Yeah. But the whole, like, pulling her into the bathtub and falling in himself, I just find it really strange. Like, I couldn't help but think about how much water they're going to have to clean off that floor.
Yeah, this is a terrible representation of a couple being playful.
Yeah, it really is. I guess actually, no, that wasn't 3 years later. 3 years later is the card we get after this, because this is when we see the priest being chased out onto a building's rooftop in a rainstorm.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. My bad. So that's justifiable.
Okay. So she was a little bit more immediate in her concern.
Yeah. She's a very interesting character. Most characters here are interesting for different reasons. So props to the original novel and the screenplay. But yeah, this man, this priest, absolutely terrified. Jumps onto a painter's platform, but falls to his death. We don't really see what he's running from, but we know it's large and it is very strong and violent. The fall to the ground, Sandro, I greatly appreciate. And I want to ask you if you know why I would. Based off of the theme of the film, what happens when the man hits the ground? It's okay if you miss this.
It's like a bug hitting a windshield?
Very close.
You can hear the confidence in my head.
There's no blood.
Oh.
There's no blood from him hitting the ground and dying. He hits a can of white paint with his head, which explodes as a representative of the blood, but makes me think of insect guts when they get crushed.
Oh. Cool.
A really cool detail. But the assailant then drags the priest's body underground as a young autistic boy watches from a neighboring window. So this boy, Chewy, takes special note of the shoes the priest is wearing and also mimics the sounds of the assailant with a pair of spoons.
Because?
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah. I mean, it both do come into play later. It just seems like such a really hard way, like, to just bring this into the movie. Very abrupt, I should say, not hard. Susan and Peter's lunch at the museum. I'm used to scenes like this in movies being dropped immediately in the storyline, so I asked the question to myself, because I did these notes upon first viewing. Do we need this infertility storyline? My thoughts? No. In retrospect, 100% we do, yes. Peter's called to the crime scene, where we meet his employee, Josh Maslow, played by a young Josh Brolin, who could definitely pass for Josh Hartnett's older brother.
Yeah. Happy to see Josh Brolin, though.
Yeah, he's great, man. I loved him as Cable in Deadpool 2. Belief that there's a potential breakout of yellow fever. This leads to the reveal of the basement of the church being filled with a massive number of illegal immigrants smuggled in by the triads for slave labor. A pretty intense scene. I actually jumped when the hands hit the window, scaring Peter.
Yeah.
No, you didn't get that jump scare?
No, not the jump. I'm just, there's a lot of stuff like the intro and like this trafficking subplot here that it's just like, did this belong to another movie?
There were a lot of reshoots done. Del Toro had the movie taken away from him and edited by the Weinsteins. And it caused a massive falling out. Did you read the IMDb trivia for this movie?
No.
Okay, I'm going to read the first one right now and we'll get back into it. But this sums up, I think, both of our problems with the film.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a lengthy paragraph, but knowledge that I think everybody listening should know.
Okay.
So director Guillermo del Toro disowned the film after constant clashes with Harvey Weinstein and Bob Weinstein. The latter complained that early footage of the film wasn't scary enough and would frequently visit the set to make unreasonable demands about what would be shot, deviating away from the script. When that did not solve the matter, Weinstein threatened to fire del Toro and replace him with another director. However, del Toro was saved by the intervention of Mira Sorvino, who was a recent Oscar winner for Mighty Aphrodite, produced by the Weinstein's company Miramax, and also a massive player in the Me Too movement. She threatened to quit the film if Del Toro's vision wasn't respected, and she received support from her then-boyfriend Quentin Tarantino, who has made several films for Miramax. The Weinsteins finally agreed to let Del Toro stay on, but they oversaw the final cut of the film, and since then Del Toro has never worked with the Weinsteins again. But he made his peace with the film after creating a director's cut that was closer to his vision. And we should say that is the version of the movie we are watching. but he pieced together what was left of a movie that he had filmed that they had butchered. So God knows what was in the story, what was in the plot that we lost out on that he tried to put back in.
Oh, that's kind of disheartening, to be honest with you. Like,
it's really disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So just let him make his movie.
Yeah, exactly. But he had only done one other film at this point, Kronos, which was really, really big in Mexico. And it is a very interesting film, but not really mainstream. So I could see their hesitation. They wanted his vision, but they wanted their movie.
And he kind of didn't have the pull himself to do it because he wasn't as big of a name yet.
Exactly. I guarantee they're kicking themselves now.
Yeah, that's just an unfortunate mix of terrible circumstances.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's why this seems so broken up for you. This human smuggling, slave labor, sweatshop thing. But we do get that one delirious woman ranting about how the dark angels are coming to get her. Do you find it weird that kids are just selling Susan dead butterflies they've collected?
Yes.
It just comes out of nowhere.
Okay. But she does have a pretty good line later. When she's talking to her friends, I think after the kids leave, she says something like, you know, they're from this area. There's much worse things they could be selling. So it is almost like she's just entertaining the kids. She doesn't actually need or want these butterflies. It so happens that they brought her something that is vital to the storyline here. But you got to imagine that their previous relationship was literally her like, yeah, I'll toss these kids $10 and throw these things on the pile when they're gone, but just to keep them doing something more honest.
And it really does, I agree, but it also really does set up the perfect opportunity for Susan to lay down the basics of insect hierarchy and how colonies work. The one thing that really got me was how some will drag live prey into the nest and leave them there to be eaten alive later on. Like, there's that has to come up later, right?
Of course.
But the kids decide it's time to sell her the weird bug. I don't think we need to see the assailant from before watching them from outside. I think if he just showed up later on and stole the insect like he does, or like it does, I think that would have been much more shocking. But yeah, we all know what the weird bug's going to be. So a reveal of that would fall flat. And I hit a high and a low back to back here.
Okay.
Del Toro nails it by not having Susan react to the insect, but instead take control of the situation, stating they have to find those kids. Only to turn it around and deflate that scene by having Susan then react to the sight of the bug, which bites her, fine. So it's a mutation of the Judas breed and not the original design. It's a leaf cutter ant and the original Judas breed mixed together. But I liked how he had originally set her up as like, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm going to take control, to I'm super confused and kind of afraid and don't know how to take control. It just seems weird to have those two scenes so close together. But now the info dump explaining that all males of the original breed were sterile. And the females were supposed to die in a few months. And that's where we get that break in. Any thoughts on the scene at all? It's fine to say no, because there's only one thing I really have to say.
Oh, what's that one thing?
We're really starting to see Del Toro's classic creature style and see how it evolves in his other movies. But as soon as you see this bug design, you're like, oh, he definitely had a say in that. It's very reminiscent of the scarab from Kronos. Do you find this assailant? I'll say assailant until it gets a proper name soon. Do you find it intimidating?
No. No.
No.
It looks like a guy in a trench coat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nondescript. It's just a human form in a trench coat. I liked how it was stuck to the ceiling like Malak in Vampires, though. That was kind of neat. But we never really see that again, so it was just for the jump scare, I guess? We'll go with, I guess. Chewie sees the assailant return to the church and dubs him Mr. Funny Shoes. What's your take on Chewie?
Annoying. Right? I should perhaps show some sympathy towards a character who is specially abled, but they just made him annoying.
Yeah. And I think that's just 1997. I think that was the interpretation of children in 97. They didn't really take the time or care to fully explain or show the child. He's just there. And now he's named the assailant Mr. Funny Shoes. Peter and Susan break into the area of the subway where the kids found the insect, but are stopped by Officer Leonard Norton, played by Charles S. Dutton, from Secret Window, Sandro.
Oh, geez, that's what he's from. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe I forgot Secret Window.
That's fine. You do it all the time. what did you think of the scene in the room here? Did it work for you?
There was a little bit of convenience, we'll say.
Yeah.
Like how they discover the openings and stuff. It's like, eh, I guess. Eh.
Way too convenient.
Yeah.
But then, like, having Norton interrupt them. See, there was one really cool shot. It showed them on the floor reaching under the lockers to see how far down that hole went.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you see a shot of the door behind them centered in the background. And you can just see through the light coming through the glass, mosaic mm-hmm. glass. Then it cuts back to them reaching more, and it shows that window again, and there is a shape standing there directly in the center looking in. And I'm thinking that's Mr. Funny Shoes. Then it goes back to them trying to, or they drop the light down the hole and it cuts back and it's actually Norton. I thought that was a really good misdirect.
The use of light and dark in this movie is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. The inclusion of Charles S. Dutton in this movie is phenomenal.
Yeah.
He is a very strong addition. Definitely makes scenes feel lighter, even though he's always so surly and angry. I wouldn't even say he's the comedic relief, but he just brings something extra that nobody else can to these scenes. So this whole time, Chewie and his father have been working in the subway. Forgot to mention that the father, Manny, is a shoe shiner. And this is where Susan notices Chewie's ability to imitate sound with his spoons. At this point, I'm thinking, maybe she'll notice that it sounds like the Judas breed that she created. No, it doesn't happen. We don't need that anymore. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, come on.
The bug hunting kids find an egg sack in the subway. One of them decides to cut it with a knife. Why?
Because they want to see that there's bugs inside to claim the reward money that they think they're going to get for it.
Even though they can hear that there are bugs inside.
Well, they need proof.
I guess.
They can't bring the whole, like, egg sack thing back.
Yeah. And they think it's worth $40 at the very least, so I get it. This led right to a holy shit moment for me.
Okay.
When Mr. Funny Shoes shows up and kills both of them.
Don't kill kids!
One is pushing it. Killing both of them is insane. And it's very brutal how it's done.
Yeah.
We don't see that often.
No, the first kid falls and gets his leg caught. And then the second one is turning to, like, address him and he's being called for help. And then, wham, the thing just grabs him from above and it's brutal.
It's like stabbing him through the back with one of its legs and then eating his face. It's fucking crazy. It's great.
No, it's not great. Don't kill kids.
Yeah, it's pretty good, man. Susan visits her mentor, Dr. Gates, when we talked about F. Murray Abraham.
And he's so good.
He's great in everything, right?
So good.
I wanted more of him in this movie.
Why is he not in more of this movie?
Honestly, if you made him Peter, that would make sense to me, except for the age difference, which might be kind of weird. But having him as a mentor character, fine, but the screen needs more F. Murray Abraham. We need more of this man. I also find his conflict with Susan's situation incredibly realistic. He's conflicted over her practices, but he completely appreciates the outcome, the results, because he believes without her creating the Judas breed and setting it loose in the city, he wouldn't have been able to even meet his grandkids. The realistic view that these movies seldom have, man.
Yeah.
It was weird. The movie is, it's not pulling punches And that makes me sad because eventually it pulls all of the punches. Yeah. I wonder if that rings true in the theatrical release. Chewie makes a dumb move of going into the condemned church.
Why?
I know.
What? There's no motivation for this other than curiosity.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that's enough.
No, it's not. He also has some weird ability to see Mr. Funny Shoes when other people can't. And it's done repeatedly throughout the film, but never addressed. And then it adds to like a weird misdirect at the very end of the movie, which was never really described or explained throughout the film. So it's kind of pointless when you see that at the end. But we know nothing serious is going to happen to this kid. They're not going to kill 3 children in one movie.
No, they're just going to open the movie implying that countless children have died and then kill 2.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're not going to see that. Plus, we know he's more of an important character. And honestly, that takes away from the scene. It removes all tension. All we have to know now is that something's going to happen, but it's not going to be the worst case scenario. And now I'm starting to see how people are mixed on this movie. It's equal amounts of legit tension and boring predictability.
It's a bad combination.
Right? It's 2 extremes.
Yeah, pick one side. Just, yeah. Even if you don't do it well, if you just picked one of the 2, it would be a better movie for it.
Really? Exactly. Like, it just fucking let it be boring and let it die, or give us something worth watching, which you've teased us with already. But yeah, the kid's abducted by 2 Mr. Funny Shoes. I think this is our first reveal. There's more than one. Even though in the end, there's only one.
Well, there's one, like, main one.
Yeah, that's right.
It has, like, as they were describing with the bug colonies, like, it has workers that are essentially doing it, like, doing the grunt work for the rest of them.
Yes. And again, we get another legitimately intense scene where workers at a water treatment plant pull a body out of a jammed turbine thinking that it's a kid. But it's not.
No.
The scene itself, not scary, just gross and very well acted. They don't really have to show you anything, and you barely see a thing. It's the reactions on the actors' faces that made me feel uncomfortable. So I'm starting to get worried, man, because there's so many great things about this movie and so many bad now. You're on the same page, right?
I completely am.
So back to that infertility storyline.
No.
Oh.
I don't want
it. Why not?
I don't want this storyline.
I get why they're using it with this, though. It does kind of make sense. Because Susan takes another test, but then gets a call from Remy, her friend, saying what we assume to be that, like, the kids are dead. She throws the test in the garbage. Peter's upset. And Susan just goes to meet Remy. We get the reveal in the garbage can that the test is actually positive and she is pregnant.
Oh, so who would have thought?
I like this. I like this, and you don't. Tell me why you don't.
Later.
Okay. Because to me, this brings in a previous plot point of her infertility, gives us a reveal of horror in what we think is supposed to be the dead kids, and also introduces a new story element that she is actually pregnant when believed that is impossible. And the only thing that's happened to her is she was bitten by the bug that the kids found.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's very well done.
Nah.
Why? Do you want to wait? Tell me now, or do we have to wait until later? We can wait. Just remember, okay?
I can't promise I'll remember.
All right. I'll try.
It has everything to do with the bug bite, dude.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the bite itself makes no sense, but the interaction with the insect, I can let that bit pass because I like how they tried to incorporate that into this evolution in Susan.
Okay, fine. All right, like, I'll ask you a question It can make me out to be an idiot, potentially.
Okay.
Did the bug bite cure her infertility?
I think it did allowed a base element of mutation for something that is supposed to not be fertile to mutate to a point where it can reproduce. Explaining the evolution of the Judas breed and how a species of insect that was supposed to die off in 3 months managed to succeed. It's science fiction, dude. Fine. We're not getting a realistic answer.
If you're going to put that in the movie, run with it more. Don't just sort of imply it and then that's it.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I picked up on that myself. The movie doesn't tell you that.
Like, okay, that's what I inferred as well, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That the Judas bug was able to find a way to reproduce. The bite somehow helped her become pregnant. But then the whole question for the rest of the movie was, why? She had already discovered that they were able to reproduce prior to that. What does this add to the movie? What is its purpose later?
Well, that's just it. It doesn't have a purpose later. I felt if they continued along, at least jumping back to address it here or there, it would be very much a welcomed element to the film. And that's what I'm saying. I love how it brings some things together, and then they just kind of abandon any reference to it.
Well, that's my problem with it. I don't have a problem with the bite curing her infertility and whatever, but just make it serve a purpose.
Well, again, I believe this to be a scene that Del Toro put back in, but didn't have the rest of the scenes to further the storyline. He just loved it so much, he put as much of it that he had left back into the story. Was it a smart move?
No.
Arguable. You don't like it. I do. But, you know, it's just an interesting conversation to have.
I'll clarify. I like the premise of it. I'm not against you on that. I have an issue with the lack of continued execution on it.
Yeah, and that is totally understandable. Next scene, we get your boy, Norman Reedus, as Jeremy.
I mean, I got no problem with him, but when did he become my boy?
He's your boy.
All right. Okay.
I didn't recognize him at all.
He looks very young.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Very young.
I think this is his second film, but like his first Hollywood film. Can you tell us about Jeremy and what was actually found in the turbine? Who is Jeremy, first of all?
He is a band member of Mira Sorvino's friend.
Remy,
he's in her band, and he remembered that she told him that her friend is all into like bugs and shit. So he called her when they discovered that it wasn't a child, but a very large bug.
Oh, it's so fucking gross.
it's kind of weak too. It's just
I didn't like it. I didn't like looking at it, but it's a really cool design.
Yeah.
Peter, Josh, and Officer Norton go back to that room in the subway, full on discovering the tunnel behind the lockers and climbing down into it, because that's a fucking smart thing to do.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Meanwhile, Manny places a call to the police trying to report his missing son. My next note says, I wish we had more Manny in this movie.
Manny and Dr. Gates.
Yeah. Oh my god, what a pairing. Entomologist and shoeshiner team up to fight giant insects in New York sewers.
It might just be like a superficial reason to say it, but like I loved having Manny in this just because I loved listening to his accent.
Yeah, he's great. I like his story too. His character and Giancarlo Giannini's performance are amazing. He's perfectly cast in this role. But do you think that his piecing together that Chewie's wire model of the insect and Mr. Funny Shoes is a little weak?
How so?
How would he connect those two things?
Well, when Mira Sorvino's character, is it Susan?
Mm-hmm.
Meets Chewie in the subway the first time, she sees that he's making it and she asks him, is this a superhero? And he says, no, it's Mr. Funny Shoes.
I don't remember Manny picking up on that, though.
I'm not necessarily, like, he didn't acknowledge it or join in the conversation, but he's right there. So I guess, too,
if he told that to Susan, he could have easily told that to his father off camera, and that's something we're just expected to understand.
Yeah, and he said to Manny a couple of times when he was at the window, like, well, what are you looking at? The first time when he sees Mr. Funny Shoes, and then it cuts back to it, and there's no one there, and Manny's like, there's no one there. He says Mr. Funny Shoes. So there's enough there for me to piece together that.
All right, I'll go along with you on that one. Did you notice when Manny decides to go check out the church? It is raining.
Okay.
But it is not raining hard enough for him to get two steps into the street and be completely soaked. Like, it looks like someone dunked him in the ocean and then just put him on a street.
Yeah, totally.
For some reason, completely took me out of the scene.
Oh. Well, I didn't notice. I really wasn't looking at, like, the dampness level of his attire. Being honest,
I don't know why it jumped out at me, man. I'm just saying that's the first thing I noticed. I'm like, fuck, he's really drenched right now.
Okay.
No one else around. It's fine. No one else around him is. It's weird. It's weird if, like, I get it if you only look at, like, that one focal point. But if you're trying to take in a scene and you look around what's happening, it doesn't make sense. But sorry, that's just me. I look into things too much. Can you tell me why his first inkling is to go into the sewer?
No. I tried to think of something clever and I couldn't.
Yeah, it just seemed weird to me. But now we're getting everyone going subterranean. Dr. Gates and Remy dissect the remains of the specimen that Jeremy found and discover enough reasoning for it to be determined part of a colony. But here, like, yeah, we've been told how this is going to work when Susan was telling the kids in her lab or whatever it was. So it's really not that shocking. It's more like, hey, remember that thing we told you about earlier? We're telling you about it again right now.
I found the more interesting piece of information in this one is when Dr. Gates is telling her that, like, these organs are fully developed.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
But other than that, no. It's just a scene to tease us to think that Dr. Gates will be in the movie more.
That's so mean.
Yeah.
And this leads us to Peter, Josh, and Norton discovering a room full of shit hanging from the ceiling. I don't like those scenes. We've encountered it before and just haven't talked about it in the episode, but just seeing shit dangling from the ceiling, I don't need it.
Is this necessary?
It's not. Because we get the egg sack scene later on. We don't need to see this at all.
No. Are we just to believe that the bugs have a bathroom? It just, when they need to go, they go to this room and shit? I guess.
I don't know. Like, back in the church, we find that some of the ceiling shit had buttons in it. Okay. Exactly. It sucks that was one of the few scenes that we get Josh Brolin in, and it's pointless.
Yeah, but it's just pointless. It's one in a long number of scenes that just makes you ask, like, why? Why is this in this?
Yeah, agreed. Piece together, man. I really wish we got Del Toro's full vision. Now, the next scene I absolutely love, but I feel like if my anticipation of your reaction is true, that you're wrong.
Oh, geez. You set me up on that one. Now I'm just going to say I liked it no matter what.
But I absolutely love the scene of Susan going through the Polaroids and piecing them together to create the face.
Oh, yeah. That was, like, one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
You know, you did a bad job, man.
What?
That was the worst attempt at feigning excitement I think I've ever heard.
You flat out said if I didn't like it, that I'm wrong. And the only thought in my mind was, yeah, I didn't like this scene.
Why? Okay, why didn't you like it? I thought it was great.
I don't like how this thing looks as its quote-unquote human form.
What would you do? You want it to look absolutely perfectly human like?
No, by no means, but it just didn't look good to me. That's all.
I liked it because it is unconvincing that it would ever pass for a human being, but I liked it that it's mutating to the point where it's trying to mimic a human being. So that itself, to me, is it's disgusting. And when she actually pieces those two photos together to see it's forming a facial structure, a human-esque or a humanistic or human-like facial structure, I thought that was really fun.
I guess it's not the same impact on an evolutionary standpoint, but if you just saw like a picture of a silhouette of it standing with a coat and hat on two legs, you're like, well, that's already
kind of... Is that Raphael?
Pardon?
Is that Raphael?
I get it. It doesn't show it on a genetic level because, you know, that in that case, you could be like, well, that's more the clothes and stuff like that. But yeah. it would still imply that it's... Like, it's aware enough of its environment to do those things that it is trying to camo itself. And I don't think it would have looked as bad in a picture. But
yeah, it's pretty fucking scary to think about, though.
Yeah.
So Susan's attacked and abducted by one of the giant creatures in probably the dumbest move a person has made in this movie. If you realize that these giant insects are now trying to mimic humans to, you know, ward off their predators or make their predators prey, and you see a shape and suspect it to be one, don't approach it. Go the other way. Definitely do not ask it for the time.
She was drawn in by the enzymes from her bite of the bug that impregnated her, and
you know what? That actually makes fucking sense.
Couldn't resist, and
that man.
You know what?
This is a weak scene.
The movie doesn't try to explain it. I ain't going to.
Yeah, you know what sucks though? Some of our favorite parts of this movie so far are things that we had to infer ourselves.
Yes,
you see where I'm going with this, right?
Yes, we could make a better movie.
Yeah, I know. We totally could. We do that pretty much on the regular on this show.
Oh, I think the answer to what happens next is very clear.
Oh, I think the answer is Mimic 4, motherfucker.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Nice. Jesus. Back in the...
I can't believe we both had the same thought of making Mimic 4.
It'd probably be cheap.
It was probably better than the other sequels.
Back in the subway, Peter and Norton fall through an old platform, trapping themselves on a lower level.
I didn't mind the visual of this platform falling. It's pretty cool.
It looked really good, right? Yeah. Really, really good. And whoever the stunt actors were took that fall really well. It looked legitimately like those two hit hard. Susan regains consciousness and tries to escape, but again, as shown earlier, these insects will drag prey deep into the nest to feast upon later. She does fuck one up really well, though.
Yeah. Well, she can't get away because they can also sense those enzymes and will always be able to track her like a genetic GPS.
Exactly. Josh, trying to find his way back to the surface, ends up finding all of the egg sacs. I had a thought here that I had to write down. I just had to ask you something.
Okay.
At this point,
mm-hmm.
upon your first viewing, who were you thinking survives this movie?
Oh, I thought Susan for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Chewie, because they weren't going to kill off another kid. And then I was thinking actually Charles S. Dutton, or maybe Manny.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I didn't cool. think that, geez, what's his name? Jeremy?
I don't know.
No.
Norman Reedus?
No. Well, Norman Reedus does survive the movie.
He does, yes, but.
Josh? Oh, Peter.
Peter.
Yeah, father of the bug child.
CDC guy.
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to survive.
Okay.
I didn't think Josh Brolin was going to survive, but I thought more of a side character like Manny or Charles S. Dutton's character, because I don't know any of the characters' names were going to survive.
Okay. These are my three notes. At this point, who were you thinking survives this movie? Next point. Everyone currently alive except for Josh. Next point. There goes Josh. It's a pretty good death scene, though.
I'm going to say, like, as soon as they told him to go find help, as a viewer, you're like, well, that's it for him.
Yeah. And Brolin wasn't really well established at this point. I mean, his father, James Brolin, a megastar. But yeah, Josh, not so much. So I wasn't surprised, but I was kind of saddened by it. So Peter and Norton. Peter suggests working on the wiring to get the lights working again. Norton tells him they would need a whole crew to get the lights working. And Peter's reaction is to scream at him, "What's your problem, man?" He doesn't have a problem, dude. He just told you that you're not going to be able to do it. That's the problem, is the two of you can't do it.
How dare you present realistic scenarios to me?
Yeah, exactly. It made me laugh. And I honestly haven't really liked Peter that much throughout this film. What does surprise me in this, though, is it's fucking Manny to the rescue.
Yeah.
Of all people, discovers Susan, finds Peter and Norton, and gets them to help him rescue her.
Yeah.
But I have a question, though.
Okay.
How did Manny get to the same level as Peter and Norton?
He was looking for Chewie and went in the sewers. And don't ask questions.
I guess there are magical stairs somewhere.
Don't ask questions, man.
Because they were stuck. They said there's no way to get off of that level. Manny got there, no problem.
Yeah, maybe he slid down a chute or something. You don't know.
I guess. And they do rescue her just in time and get chased into an old subway car in what is probably the most intense scene of the movie for me. And I love this. I have to say the acting is top notch. The music was great, but Beltrami, sue me. The lighting, the creature effects, give me more of this in this movie. Like, we started off really strong, then we got lulled into almost sleep. Then we get this. Continue this energy for the rest of the movie, and I'll be happy.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later.
It's a tale of two movies, my friend.
It is. I like how the insect chasing them gets ripped in half with the top half being trapped in the subway car.
Yeah, I really felt they should have been capable of closing that door a little bit sooner.
Yeah, right?
It was not done well in the sense that it was like, you guys are just delaying this.
Yeah.
Get moving.
It was still intense, though. It didn't really detract from my appreciation of it, but I will agree, yeah, that could have been done a bit better. My next note just says, maybe my survivor prediction was off. Man, I felt so bad when Norton's leg got so injured.
Yeah.
I really liked Dutton as an actor. I loved his character in this movie, and I didn't want that.
I still had hope, though, dude.
Me too. We both loved this character, and we were pulling for him. They did a great job at sucking us into appreciating Officer Norton.
I thought that the injury to the leg could be a misdirect, right? That you're now telling us potentially, oh, he has a reason to hang back, and now he might survive and come save the day when you've put him out of your mind because he's injured. That's not what we got, but
no.
It was still a possibility.
He is a hero, though, in this film. He is definitely a hero.
Yeah.
He doesn't save the day, but he helps. The discovery that the insect has developed lungs is really getting us into some pretty intense sci-fi here, which I enjoy. Are you cool with that? Or do you want this to be more of a straight-up horror film?
I just think it's a little bit more of the unnecessary at this point, because we've already established that it's evolving to appear like us. You don't need to get into detail of like, oh, it's getting lungs now. We can already infer the threat here based on just the fact that it's turning into like a more visually human type thing in order to hunt them. I don't need to get into details about like what organs it's developed.
That's true. And it's completely unnecessary. I enjoyed it, but from a story element, like a plot point, it could easily be omitted. I will give you that. But then Susan says something along the lines of sometimes an insect can mimic its predator. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, we kind of been learning that over the last hour. But she's doing this as she's piecing the faceplates together, which we already saw her do with the Polaroids. So now I feel like we're just retreading things we don't need to address.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments in the movie where they explain things to you as if you're an idiot and haven't been watching the movie up until now.
Yeah, right? I got that too.
So, yeah.
It's like they're expecting the audience to not really be paying attention, so they need to reiterate certain things so you're up to pace with the rest of the movie by the time it's over.
Yeah.
And we go right into the assault on the subway car here. Because these things are attracted to the scent of blood and Norton's leg is bleeding horribly. And then, man, I am not normally so queasy watching a horror film, but maybe it's because the hour I was watching it. There's a gross out scene here that got me, and that's rubbing the bug's innards on the windows to mask the scent of blood.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm the queasy one, and I had no problem with this.
I know. I'm really worried I'm getting soft.
It could have just been a moment of weakness.
Oh, I had a problem with this, man. I had a major problem with this.
Okay.
But that's Rob Bottin's effects, man. He did a great job. It looked so gross, dude. I don't even want to think. Okay, moving on. Formulating the plan. Another great scene, if you ask me.
Okay.
They'll get the subway car moving to the next stop, possibly getting them to an exit. Susan and Manny need to get to the surface so they can undo what's been done. Norton is not doing well, and Peter is basically saying he'll sacrifice himself. So, thoughts?
Peter could have just told her?
Yes.
Like,
that was my thought as well.
His whole rationale is, oh, you know about these bugs, so we need you to stay alive. It's like, come on, man. Like, you're not even trying. If it was me, I think my first answer would be like, or my first response would be like, no, really, what's the reason?
If I were Peter, I'd be like, look, you're stronger than me. You're smarter than me. You're pregnant. You know what's going on. I don't fully grasp this. You could probably fix it. We need to make sure you stay alive.
Yep.
Peter sucks. Okay, so let me ask you. We've got these four characters. What do you think about Susan at this point?
I'm biased.
Oh, okay.
I just love her so much.
She's great.
Yeah.
You mean the character or Mira Sorvino?
Mira Sorvino, right.
Yeah, I think both are absolutely amazing here. What about Peter?
I don't like Peter.
I think he's acted very well, but he seems delusional, and he seems like he's trying to be smarter than her, and eventually admits that he's not even close.
Yeah.
Officer Norton.
He's great.
He is great. Absolutely great.
I just love having that punchy, gruff, no-nonsense kind of character in there. He's just great.
Exactly. And Manny.
Manny's great as well. Just because I love his accent. I could listen to him a long time.
Those four coming up with the plan in that subway car made me want to play Left 4 Dead.
Oh, okay.
I was like, this would be an amazing Left 4 Dead or Back 4 Blood scenario. This would be a great scene to try and play out. Just instead of zombies, you get giant insects. Next.
Okay.
Putting the plan into action. Manny gets distracted when he thinks he hears Chewie, who he completely seems to have forgotten about at this point in the movie.
I don't think it's so much that he's forgotten, but he's in a situation of immediate peril and needs to just survive in order to find Chewie.
Peter encounters one of the monsters. That's basically what they are now. But he's so covered in it, the guts of the other one, that it just crawls past him. Then we get more information. I mean, we could all assume anyway, but the insects could use the subway lines to spread all over the city, creating new colonies. So they need to find the one fertile male in the nest and kill it so the rest die out. Fine. Next note. And there goes Manny. That made me upset.
Yeah.
I really wanted him to make it.
I did too, but you kind of knew he wasn't going to.
Yeah, I know.
Is this one of the parts you had a problem with? Because I know you were referencing it earlier with Chewie.
Go on.
Well, isn't this where he finds Chewie?
Yes.
Chewie's kind of like standing behind like a pipe or something like that.
Yeah.
And he refers to the bugs as his friends, I think it is what he says.
Yeah, he says friends.
And then he's shocked when the bug kills Manny.
Yes, I did have a problem with that. Yeah, you're right. There is something else I have to admit here.
Okay.
In horror films, like classic slasher movies,
okay,
I hate when they have off-screen kills.
Okay.
The only two kills in this movie so far that I'm aware of are the children.
Okay.
Josh dies off-screen. Well, his wound is done off-screen. Manny is killed off-screen. But these still really work for me.
Okay.
It just shows how you can have an off-screen kill that is still incredibly effective and moving. So hats off to Del Toro here.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is that they show a very large amount of injuries and attacks that lead up to the kill. So yes, that it doesn't feel completely void of context.
But you don't need to see them die on screen, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that's a tough one to succeed with. And he did it at least twice very well. So Peter gets the power back on, but the subway car gets stuck. Susan rescues Chewie, and along with Peter, they make a break for it. And poor Norton, man, gets absolutely destroyed as he tries to draw the insects away from the others.
It's a very heroic moment, though, when he sacrifices himself to lure them away.
It's very noble.
I also want to point out that when Susan goes to look for Manny,
yeah,
as she's walking out of the subway car, you can hear her say, "Chewie."
I know.
She doesn't know he's down there yet.
He has no idea. She's going for Manny.
Yes.
Editing.
That was the first time on my viewing that I actually rewound a part, because I was like, did I hear that right?
Peter uses himself as a distraction with the hopes of allowing Susan and Chewie to get to the surface in a dumbwaiter, which is weird. He inadvertently traps himself in the nest and uses a broken gas line to destroy it. Pretty solid explosion, I have to say. Destroys a few things on street level. I can tell you've got more to add, so please do.
There's no way he survives this.
Well, that is a major problem I have, which I have a note on later on.
You're kidding me, right?
There's no way.
Not a chance. This explosion went to the surface level.
Yeah.
And he's at the center of it.
Oh. We need to cover the next scene, and then we'll get back into this exact problem that you just stated.
Okay.
So, killing the male. It almost kills Chewie. Susan distracts it by cutting her hand and bleeding.
Yeah, as they're attracted to the blood.
So it chases her head on into a moving subway car and gets obliterated.
Yes.
My first thought here is not interesting. My first thought is, I really hope Chewie got out of the way.
That's the thought that I had too, because he's standing right in the middle of the tracks, and I'm like, well, we didn't see him move out of the way, and doesn't seem to be very perceptive, but...
But he got further out of the way than Susan did.
Yeah.
But like we both agreed, they're not going to kill off three kids on screen in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So the aftermath.
All right.
They're above ground. Police are on scene, rescue services. People are being like brought out through the subway exits onto the streets. Chewie thinks he sees Mr. Funny Shoes. Again, none of the adults ever see it. But it's a misdirect because it's actually Peter, who, like you said, somehow miraculously survived. Now, my problem here is that if that's the case, then anything could have also survived.
Yes. I actually would have preferred that it was Mr. Funny Shoes at this point.
Me too.
You know what? Make it Mr. Funny Shoes wearing Peter's face. I don't care.
I mean, that's fucked up, but I kind of like it.
Like, I'm sorry. There's no way he should be alive. I was perfectly content at this moment to just accept that Susan and Chewie were the only two survivors.
Exactly. I'm okay with that. But no, we think maybe Mr. Funny Shoes, but no, it's actually Peter, which makes no sense. So they embrace, and Peter tells her that she's pregnant, and the movie just ends.
Okay.
There is no closure to anything.
Just make like her not pregnant. Her and Chewie, the only two survivors, and now she's going to be his maternal figure because she's all he has left.
Exactly. I thought that's where we would be going, but no. This is a terrible ending.
Yep.
This is absolutely terrible.
Yes, it must perfectly lead into the sequels.
And that's that. See, my explanation about Peter surviving means other things must have survived. That's the only way I can see the sequels working.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such an insult to this movie, where whoever wrote the sequel, they're like, well, that's a major plot hole I'm going to exploit.
I've never seen them. I don't know the first thing about them, but I hope that the first sequel starts with them discovering that Peter is Mr. Funny Shoes wearing Peter's face.
I mean, that'd be pretty great.
There we go. That's the start of the second movie.
Way. No fucking way. Maybe the start of our movie. We'll do a direct sequel to this.
Yeah, we'll just forget that the other sequels even exist.
It's just one scene of how the movie should have ended. Oh, man. Let's get into some numbers here.
Alrighty.
1997. Guillermo del Toro's first major motion picture in North America. Well, not North America. In Canada and the U.S.
Okay.
What do you think the budget was looking at this cast?
The cast is
pretty... And the effects.
Cast is pretty good. The effects are pretty decent. $20 million.
$30 million.
Okay.
Nah, not terrible. I think they've done quite a bit with that number.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. Yeah.
It's really gross, right?
I mean, it had Mira Sorvino. You know, as you said, she just came off an Oscar. So I feel like that would have brought people into the theater alone. $65 million.
25 and a half.
Ugh.
It was a failure. No wonder it got direct-to-video sequels.
I guess I should have put that into my equation, but I did not.
It's a shame. It's a shame. This movie should have done better than it did. The reviews I found strangely unbalanced.
Okay.
And I think when I say strange, you'll agree with me when you see them all. So IMDb, out of 10, what do you think it got?
6.2.
Six.
Oh, okay.
Positive reviews from critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
48.
65.
Okay.
But the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is what caught me off guard.
39.
37.
Oof.
So you were close.
On a couple of them, yeah.
But going from 6 out of 10 on IMDb to 37 on Rotten Tomatoes, it there's some weird thing going on there. Get into awards?
You betcha, buddy. So who did you have for your least favorite character?
Peter. Jeremy Northam. I just found him all around unlikable.
I'm with you too, man. There was so... That is my pick as well. Yeah. There was so many moments in the movie where I'm like, we're going to find out that he's the villain. He knew that the bugs were going to do it and he did it for money or something like that. Like, I'm just waiting for this guy to not be a good guy. It never happened.
Yeah. Every time he's on screen, I'm like, this is just an unlikable fuck.
Yeah. And if you're going to build up a character like that to make, like, maybe it's unintentional, but if you make a character like that where the audience is going to feel like he's unlikable, he's going to be a villain or anything like that, you made a mistake.
Yeah. It's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, just make him a villain then somehow. I don't care.
Yeah. Which also would really add to the relationship between him and Susan, especially being married.
Sure. Make it that he never cared about saving children with the Judas bug. He just wanted the money from the government. Make it that she wasn't infertile, but he was just slipping her birth control or something. I don't know. Like,
dastardly.
Like, you can make this guy so much more of a villain and unlikable, and then it would make sense, everything that you've been experiencing with him up until now.
Yeah. Doing that may have removed him from least favorite character.
No, because then at least it would make sense. But a big part of why he got least favorite character for me is because he wasn't supposed to be an unlikable character.
Yeah. What about your favorite character?
Oh, I went with Charles S. Dutton because, I mean,
really?
The curmudgeon-y cop. It's a tough choice, man. There is a bunch of good candidates here.
Yeah, there really are. I had to go with Susan.
Okay.
Played by Mira Sorvino. I found her very realistic. I found her brilliant, but terrified of the repercussions of her actions, heroic and caring. There were too many things about her. She made one wrong move in the movie, and that was fucking asking for the time from one of the insects. Other than that, I felt that she was a very competent character and very realistic.
I tried not to pick her because I felt that some of it might have been influenced by superficial reasons.
Yeah, well, that's a you thing.
She's gorgeous.
It's a me thing, too. I'm ripping on you.
What do you want? She's absolutely stunning. Anyways, what was your favorite or most memorable line?
For me, it's when Susan says, or yells, really, "We changed its DNA, Peter. I mean, we don't know what we did." Now, first off, that's a very powerful line. Sure. But it covers any plot holes about the mutations of the insects. Because, yeah, it's a line that's delivered very well. It saves part of the story, but it omits any necessity to explain how these insects are mutating, how unrealistic this is. She can basically say, "We don't know what happened, but it's our fault." I'm like, bam. Cover any plot holes, take all of the blame, acknowledge the fact that there's a major issue coming that we're going to have to fight against. Loved it. You?
Well, I mean, for people that are supposed to be so smart, them screwing this up so royally is a little baffling to me.
Okay.
But, hey, I get it. I get it entirely. My favorite line was actually from Dr. Gates. And it is in the conversation that we alluded to when he's talking about being hypocritical about, you know, thinking that it was wrong to release the bugs, but being a hypocrite if he says that, you know, because he thinks that two of his grandkids are alive because of it.
Yeah.
When he is trying to explain to her the gravity of the situation that she's still kind of grappling to come to terms with, he says, "But you let them out into the world. The world is a much bigger lab." Because she was talking about how they died off without breeding in the lab. And it's just like,
yeah,
these are not controlled environments anymore. It's just a very, very important line to the plot, I think.
Yeah. No, it's very good. Very good. Memorable scene?
I don't have one. All I wrote down was, "Don't kill children." I know that sounds like a cop-out, but like, I guess even just like the intro, when she's walking through that makeshift hospital, the hallway at the beginning, and she's looking at some of the kids, there's this one little boy that looks like he's just struggling so much that I'm like, this is the hardest part for me to watch.
Yeah.
Don't kill
children. I get that.
Don't do it.
I knew it was going to be something like that for you.
Yeah, you know everything about me, don't you?
I just know your reaction to kids being injured in movies now that you're a father.
Yeah. Well, you've also predicted quite a few of the things in this episode. So
I'm going to have to go with Josh's death.
Okay. That was one of the better ones.
Yeah. It's, I was like, there are much better scenes in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought Josh Brolin did an amazing job with a minimal amount of screen time here, because we only see his top half coming through a hole in the floor, trying to grab a hold of a plug to like a sewing machine or a lamp or something. and drag himself out, but he's impaled off screen by one of the insects, and you see the blood splatter and the look on his face of it's over. But then the determination is still pull himself out before he gets pulled back down. I thought it was really well done. Really, really well done.
It was well done. You knew that he was done, but it still kind of gave you a little bit of hope. Like, is he going to get out in time? Maybe this isn't his time and he'll die later in the movie, but it was very well done.
Yeah.
All right, so that's awards. Ben, what are your final thoughts on Mimic?
I actually liked it quite a bit.
Okay.
Its pros and cons are basically 50-50 if you look at the amount of them, but the pros are so much stronger for me. We definitely praise this movie more than we shit on it. The thing is, it does have a lot of problems, and if you can look past them, it's great. The thing is, it's easy to look past these problems. It's hard to ignore its strengths. It's not an amazing film. We've already agreed we're not going to bother with parts 2 or 3, mainly because we're going to do part 4 or around 6. The acting is strong. It's always great to see Mira Sorvino, Josh Brolin, Dutton, Abraham for sure. Nice to see Norman Reedus so early on. Giancarlo Giannini, we both really appreciated. Didn't even mention the fact that Doug Jones did some work in a suit here. For a 1997 film, and it only be the director's second movie, it's pretty fucking good, man. To anybody who hasn't seen Mimic, I think you should give it a shot. It might not wow you, but it will give you some pretty interesting scenes that you're not going to catch anywhere else. I just wish it had a stronger finish. It's so weak that you really have to hope that the early on strengths stick with you. Otherwise, you might find it disappointing. I honestly don't know how you're going to go with this one, but I'm curious. Sandra, how do you feel about this movie?
I feel the opposite to you and do not like this movie and do not recommend it. I think that the tale of two movies that we alluded to is a real problem with it. The beginning half is well done. Feels like a slow burn. Feels like a crime mystery movie that I feel like if that was the entire movie and not a horror movie, I would have actually really liked it. The second part of the movie, pretty much when they get to the subway car, is pretty much an all-out action horror movie. I think that was well done, but doesn't match the first half. If the entire movie was that, I think it would have been a better movie. I don't think that you can watch this Frankenstein of a movie and really enjoy it.
Yeah, it is a very confused take on what could have been a really good story.
Well, it's like you took two good movie ideas and fused them together into one bad movie.
Yeah, agreed. That's a much more accurate representation of this movie than what I stated.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that is our thoughts on Mimic. If you guys want to share your thoughts with us, as always, we encourage you to hit us up on social media. We are on Twitter at BSBargainBin, Facebook.com/BSBargainBin, BSBargainBin.com, and of course, YouTube.com/@BSBargainBin, where you can leave a comment in the comment section. Ben.
Yo.
What are we watching next week, buddy?
Well, summer is drawing to an end, so we're going to jump full on into winter with one of the weirdest casted films I have ever seen. We're talking 1997's Snowboard Academy.
Welcome to the only school on the planet where the path to higher learning is all downhill.
Snowboarding is new. It's happening. It's hot. It's fresh.
As you strap yourself in for a crash course in comedy at Snowboard Academy.
God, I miss the equator.
Starring Jim Varney, star of the highly successful Burn films.
You've heard of me.
Corey Haim. Brigitte Nielsen and SCTV's Joe Flaherty.
Not exactly the brightest crayon in the box, are you?
It's an inspiring story of dedicated teaching professionals.
Boys, boys!
Group hug?
Oh, thanks, Dennis.
State-of-the-art outdoor educational techniques.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
And stimulating extracurricular activities.
I thought I'd seen everything.
Or maybe it's just an outrageous avalanche of high-velocity mayhem.
Check it out.
Check, Jake.
If I hear the word check one more time.
Checkmate.
Check, please.
Check out those bibs.
Do we take traveler's tests?
And over-the-edge action.
We have to let the skiers know that we are here to stay.
Without a shred of socially redeeming values.
Our show is being brought to you tonight in portion by the Bedazzler.
You decide.
You're on.
Either way, Snowboard Academy is the school of cool.
Ooh, that had to hurt.
Snowboard Academy. Bring it home today on video cassette. Available from Columbia TriStar Home Video.
Until next week. Have a good one.
All the best.